In Conversation with Dr. Eve.
Dr. Eve joins me now. Dr. Eve, good evening to you and thank you so much for joining us. Yet another courageous conversation as we talk about rough sex and the trauma of consent. Good evening to you, Dr. Eve.
Hi, Aubrey. Nice to be with you indeed. On this Human Rights Day.
And a very interesting topic today. Yeah, I mean, consent, the trauma of consent and rough sex, especially as it pertains to young adults and teens. Talk to me, Doctor.
Yeah, I can hear the question mark at the end of your voice. Yeah. That's lovely. I'm pleased that you're curious. So we always want to give the normal caveats out, Aubrey, that for anybody who is listening, this may be triggering for you, either around the rough sex part or the consent part, some trauma that anyone may have experienced. Please take care of yourself by either soothing, self-soothing, containing, or switching off and come back at 9 to Aubrey. So this is incredibly important information for parents to be learning about, for educators to know about, for even policymakers to know about, is what really is happening to your kid. And all of our show tonight is based on this book by my colleague, Dr. Debbie Herbenick, who is in Illinois at the Kinsey Institute. And her book is called Yes, Your Kid: What Parents Need to Know About Today's Teens and Sex. And I had been reading on her research as she was publishing some articles in professional journals. But I have to tell you, Aubrey, when it came out in one big bang in her book, a whole section, in fact, the majority of the book is based on rough sex, I found myself gasping. I found myself feeling breathless and feeling quite gutted and knotted. And it wasn't because I found it exciting and sexual. I found it absolutely traumatizing, actually, to get full-blown account of her very robust research of looking at what, obviously, a U.S. population, but because we can transpose that to South Africa's world, we do have to be aware that this may be happening to our young people as well, specifically to our teens and to young adults. Do want to be having this conversation, which may feel difficult, as it did for me to swallow, and I'm being quite cynical about that, which you'll find out later, and to be able to really stomach the information that we're going to be sharing tonight. So we want to be able to talk about consent, because this is something that most everybody who gets into a sexual situation really struggles with.
Yeah.
The consent, the ability for young children, for people in general, even adults, kick-ass adults like me, to be able to say no in any kind of situation, to be able to manage what they anticipate would be conflict or rejection or a difficult experience. Put that into a sexual experience with a partner, and you can almost feel, and again, I'm using this language deliberately, you can almost feel gagged as you swallow your bowel and say no to a kind of sexual activity that your partner has either asked for or indicated they wanted or just simply expected, because you do fear that actually you may be rejected or you may be hurt or you may actually just feel really bad and guilty and shameful around yourself.
Yeah.
So it's important for parents to be introducing their children as early as possible to consent, because when there are no boundaries, and we're talking tonight specifically around sexual and intimacy and relational boundaries, it can leave the young person feeling very unsafe. And if this is the ongoing experience of a child of not having any boundaries, they really will struggle in a very traumatized way when it comes to trying to negotiate and to stand up for themselves in a sexual situation.
Yeah.
Which is why when we now are going to understand tonight what the kind of sex young people are expected to do, the kind of sex which has been mainstreamed and normalized. Imagine how difficult and challenging it is for your young person, your young child, to be able to stand up and say no, or to lie there and say no, I don't want this, which is now called rough sex. So it's important that we invite people to talk about the difficulty that they have around consent. And we also know that anyone who has got a history of any kind of traumatic sexual violations, from incest to being a young person who was sexually violated to being an older person who was sexually violated, through intimate partner violence or incest or any other kind of rape or violation, it's very difficult to feel safe to say no, because they knew when they were children, or they knew when they were in that situation, that saying no meant nothing. Didn't change anything for them. The person didn't get off them. The person didn't see them. The person didn't listen to them. So saying no in a so-called consensual environment is incredibly difficult. We have to acknowledge that. It's just shaming, Aubrey, when people don't use a condom, or when are not on contraceptives, perhaps, or don't disclose HIV, STIs.
Yeah.
We have to be really compassionate that it's a difficult thing to do. Let's bring in, you know, pornography and how this is linked to rough sex. Maybe you want to like find out a little what rough sex is. Are you curious?
Yes, I am. I'm still waiting to get a sense of what are we talking
about?
Yeah.
So, okay, so let me use you again as my wonderful guinea pig, as you always do. When you think about rough sex and in your generation, what would that have meant?
Hell, I don't know. Probably some dirty talk, and maybe some some dirty talk and saying things to each other. And I suppose there'd probably be a bit of assaulting each other there. I don't know, Dr. Eve. I come from a background where sex is supposed to be nice. It's supposed to be mutually satisfying and edifying, and it should be about loving each other rather than it being rough. I'm sort of having a hard time in my own mind trying to understand what that would mean.
Absolutely, you're kind of on track with this. And why this is so startling is because of the rapid change, the very profound change that has happened in terms of definition and behavior around this term rough sex. So rough sex back in the day, before Gen X, might have been some kind of light spanking, some blindfolding, some adventurous, or even what some would define as a little bit of kinky sex. And you would be a little bit kinky if you would put on a blindfold, or if you had some light bondage, and some light spanking and some light paddling. That would have been considered rough. And it maybe also be that, you know, I kind of held your arms down. That might have been considered rough. But today, without any communication or consent, this is what rough sex looks like. Choking, face slapping, smothering, name calling, consensual, non-consensual sex, in other words, repeating or role-playing a rape, face effing, facial ejaculation, gagging, punching, slapping, hitting genitals, punching genitals, being able to say really humiliating things to each other. And I, like you, think about sexuality as the one place when somebody can exhale, when somebody who is in a safe and consenting space is able to surrender to the joy and the pleasure that the body can give. And as you say, mutually share that. Have an experience that's going to be not only uplifting, but it's going to be giving you enormous sense of your own confidence, self-esteem, and a feeling of connection and what you would call love. And I wonder whether this kind of sexual behavior, which I repeat, has now become mainstream and normative and expected, gives people that kind of experience. If you are choked, or really that's just a nice synonym for strangulation, if you're slapped in your face and smothered, if you're called humiliating names, if you have to reenact a rape scene, if you are what's called ball busted, hitting, punching, kicking in the testicles, urinating in a partner, having double.
Urinate.
Yeah, that's, you know, that can be part of what's called kinky sex, which is quite, it's been around for a long time when there is consent around, around, you know, showers, golden showers, as it's called. So is this what one would define as being sexual, consensual sexual activity? And what the book, what Debbie Hubeneck's research shows, this is the kind of sex that your children are experiencing as normal.
How do we
So the
know? How
question.
do we? How do we know this, Dr. Eve? How do we know that one? This is because it sounds like a WWE wrestling match. I mean, in the extreme, right? Secondly, how do we know that it has been mainstreamed? How do we get to that conclusion?
So, as I said at the beginning, and I'll repeat it, Debbie Hubeneck is a very highly regarded researcher at the Kinsey Institute in America. And she started doing this research a number of years ago, following up with college students and younger people. She administered questionnaires to them. And this was her shocking revelation. She's quite open about the fact that she was really, really shocked by the kind of sexuality that people, that young people and young adults are engaging in. And then she looked to see, you know, why? Where did this come from? Why is this happening? That there is this quite profound change in sexual behavior of young people. Where did they learn it? Why would they want to do it? And that's where we come to the link of pornography, where we know this, and I'm just going to repeat statistics that I think our listeners are familiar with, but it's worth noting over and over again. Because really, I think tonight for me, Aubrey, is a lesson for parents to wake up and shake up and to be able to ask your children about consensual sex and what kind of sexual activity are you engaged in. You know, are you having sex? We shouldn't be having sex. What kind of sexual activity? Because this is kind of what research tells us. Anyway, so let's look at some of the porn statistics. 95% of teens are online. No, it's a no-brainer. But what is online? Sexual images, which are widely available. Click of a button. Surveys show that three quarters of teens aged between 13 and 17 had seen porn, and that more than half had seen porn by 13 years old. An average, the first ever scene of porn is 11 to 12 years old. And this book, I mean, Debbie published her book this year, but obviously her research is a few years old and probably 2, 3 years. And the latest research that I've come across is that the average first scene of porn is 9. So what is the porn showing us? These kids are seeing it. What are they seeing? They show sex in highly aggressive ways, much more than in previous generations. So your videos on porn sites show, reinforce the ideas that sex is aggressive, misogynistic, and contrary to all societal standards. Your most common form of normalized porn is incest porn, non-consensual sex between step-siblings. And yet, what's interesting is that when she said to young adults, what kind of sex, or previous work that she'd done, what kind of sex are young adults report that they're doing? They say they're doing what's called the escalation. They're kissing, they're touching. They're playing around, and they even sometimes have intercourse. But these porn patterns have begun to influence young people and how they believe sexuality is, that it should be non-consensual and should be rough, including non-consensual anal sex. I mean, that's just, de rigueur, that's just standard. No condom, no consent, no conversation, no communication. You're just going to go there. We're just going to go there, whether we discuss it or not, because we expect that we're all doing it, because that's normal. So we don't discuss it. Where back in the day, it was a big deal to have anal sex. It was kind of kinky. And I remember doing a lot of radio shows and education around how to do safer anal sex, because this was something new for people, using lubricant, getting consent, using a condom, being really careful, being really cautious, and, you know, following certain steps to be able to have safer, less painful anal sex. Well, today, it's just part of what you do.
You know, Dr. Eve, I've got three kids, and my kids are online. My kids are, and I suppose most children these days are online, and I imagine that my kids are also exposed to things that most kids are exposed to. So mm-hmm. hearing this is actually quite jarring for me,
mm-hmm.
because sex, lovemaking as we call it, it has been that in my mind forever. That it's about companionship. It's about, indeed, it's about consent, because it's about sharing. It's about tenderness. It's about caring. It's about all of that. So to hear that rape, frankly, has been normalized and mainstreamed is quite a scary situation. And my mind goes to, how have we weakened? How have we allowed? How have we weakened the firewall that, you know, whenever you hear about that kind of rough sex you're talking about, it's the kind of thing that you hear about in prisons. When somebody is being humiliated in order for them to be to either join a gang or to be punished or to be that kind of thing is usually what you hear from that space. But to hear that it is mainstreamed, it has been normalized, it has now become that which is expected, that this is consensual, unconsensual. I mean, that whole thing just plays with my mind. How can something be consensual and unconsensual at the same time? And I suppose that's the kink, isn't it? That's the allure. That's the novelty of it all. That it's something that is consensual, unconsensuality. I'm sorry, my mind is just all over the place. Could that be part of the whole thing? I thought I was a pretty hip guy. I'm feeling very, very old right now. I'm feeling very, very conservative right now to hear that this is what's taking place. So where did the firewall of consensuality begin to weaken? And I heard myself say, this sounds like a WWE wrestling match. Could it be that part of the process of the weakening of the firewall of what we believe was normal and abnormal, and I mean, could it be that it was because we started to normalize the violence that we see on WWE, and we fetishize it, we're almost sexually aroused by it. Could it be that that kind of evolution in our, in the way that we are entertained, has been part of the reason why we have slowly over time begun to normalize what would have been absolutely deplorable ideas around sex, consent, and all of those kinds of things?
I think that is violence with giving the same kind of dopamine thrill, Aubrey. I do believe, without any blaming or shaming of us as parents, that we're tired and we're a lot in survival mode, and we don't really want to or feel equipped to have conversations around sexuality with our children, or to even gatekeep what they're really watching. We go into extreme rigidity around taking away the you know, the devices, shutting them down, punishing them by removing them, which of course is really harmful punishment actually. And we're tired and we're distracted and we're depressed. We're addicted. We have worries and we're not really very always very present as parents. And we use social media and we use devices just to distract our children, give us a break. And I repeat, we're not gatekeeping. We're not having important conversations with our children about what would be, as you describe, because that's your value system, you know, imparting your own values to children.
Yes.
Around what would be a sexual experience or how it should feel. We know that, you know, people should be doing that, parents giving their own values, their own cultural narratives around what sexuality is, to be able to give children the boundaries and safety and to prevent and to help them avoid any kind of traumatic sexual experience. But who amongst us are comfortable enough to talk about sexuality with our children? Mm-hmm. Who amongst us has spoken about that? Who amongst us has done any form of pornography education, which is required in every school curriculum, which is, of course, is not being done, to teach them the difference between pornography and real sex, to teach them about pornography being something which is an act that people are chosen for certain body types and looks and behaviors. And it is an action movie that has absolutely no relationship to real life encounters. In pornography, you don't get to see condom usage. You don't get to see conversations around consent. You don't get to see people negotiating for any kind of sexual activity. You don't see connection or communication or any form of attachment. And that's what people, and we talk about this on the show all the time, that's what people long for most, right? Is a connection, the feeling of being seen and visible.
Yes.
Abandoned and neglected through this kind of activity. Because if you think about this kind of activity, and I'm going to repeat it, even though I choke on it, this is the activity that has become normalized and mainstream that your teens are going to be exposed to, young adults as well, in terms of what they should be or expected to do when they get into a sexual situation with a partner. They should expect to have choking, face, I think you can guess the last word, and that means real brutal gagging of a penis into a mouth, name calling, humiliation, being punched, restrained, slapped, smothered, spanked, and having recreation, enactment of role playing, rape scenarios.
Let me ask this, Dr. Yes. Eve. Is this considered something pleasurable?
Very important question. So the question comes up is why, which is what Debbie asked. Why do people engage us? And they answered similarly to what you mentioned just now, Aubrey. It feels kinky, adventurous, exciting. It's novel. It enhances my arousal and it makes orgasm for myself and my partner easier. The risks highlight, this I find the most devastating, I have to tell you. The risk highlights how much they trust one another and that it builds intimacy. Can you imagine that when somebody punches you in your face, that is a sign of how much we trust one another and makes me feel more connected to you?
Is it the punch in the face that makes mm-hmm. me feel connected to you, or is it the fact that I'm giving you permission to punch me in the face?
Well, I'm not giving you permission because you're not asking. The fact that I'm accepting that this is what we do, and that means that I trust that we are not going to harm each other, that this is something mutually agreeable, even though there isn't a conversation around it.
It's an act
of love, Aubrey, an act of desire, an act of this is how much I trust you to be able to punch me. If you allow me to punch me, if you don't object to me punching you in your face or in your testicles or slapping your face or biting you, that means that you trust me. And that means,
you know, Dr. Eve, I'm going to be very honest. I get it. As you speak now, I hear, I get it. I know it's going to sound weird, but I get how in somebody's mind, a deviation from a social norm,
mm-hmm.
can a shared deviation from a social norm can feel and maybe even be intimate. I get that Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing that mm-hmm. that people can find intimacy in being
subversive.
Well, in doing something that is not considered to be normal,
yeah.
And sharing that space of deviance of going away from the beaten track. I get how that can be, that can give somebody a sense of intimacy. Let me tell you where I'm coming from, and maybe you'll help me out. When I was a teenager, and I was at a boys' school, I went out with a white girl, which at the time was not socially acceptable for many, many reasons that we as South Africans know. And I remember that the disapproval from her parents and my parents of that kind of relationship, from my parents because they felt, this is very unsafe for you, my boy, you know. From her parents, mm-hmm. because this is not what you do. You stick within your culture and you're going down. Mm-hmm. You're not going up, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It created, and we were fueled in our relationship by that, by the fact that society sort of felt or said to us that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense. And I know that this is superimposing something. But I'm saying that I get how a couple or people that are involved in an intimate relationship can find a sense of intimacy and connectedness by doing something that is considered to be deviant in society at a particular time. So I get that. What I don't get is how punching somebody in the testicles can be pleasurable.
Yeah. You know, Obi, I'm with you. It's not something strange. I have to share. I've had similar experience to you because I've dated, been in relationship with black men and had the same kind of experience as you describe. I don't think it's comparable. I don't know, maybe the releasing of the hormones are comparable of that.
Yep.
The excitement, the fear of being caught, the risk. And but this somehow feels in a different genre for me.
No, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. What I was simply making reference to is how I think people who engage in something that is frowned upon in society. And that's why I said that Bonnie and Clyde thing, you know, where two people feel more in love, more romantically connected because they're doing something together that society doesn't agree with. But I agree with you that these are incomparable incomparable contents of the same principle. I get that. Yeah. I'm simply saying that I get that aspect of it. What I don't get is how beating each other up like that is pleasurable.
Okay, so that's I'm putting that into the category of us against the world, what you described, the Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
It's very exciting and can certainly enhance arousal as you have that sense of almost power. So here we go. There's some crossover here. Why do young people, let's go back to that, why do they engage in rough sex? We've spoken about that it feels exciting, it's a novelty. And the feeling that it builds intimacy and trust. And then we come into, well, and she's got a lot of narrative anecdotes, which are backed up by her research, that I feel pressured. Because if I do not go along with it, I'm considered undesirable. And I am, and how's this feel? word, I'm vanilla shamed. If I just want to hang out and have kind of what one would call normal vanilla sexuality, I'm vanilla shamed.
It's the third time I hear that word used in that way. What does that mean, Dr. Eve?
Vanilla is the opposite of being kinky. You know, the whole definition of what kinky is, as yeah. the book at the beginning, has changed.
So vanilla would be pedestrian, would be...
It's mono-heteronormative sexual activity where you just follow the escalator. You'd get into one relationship with somebody of the opposite sex with you, and it would be probably somebody of the same color and the same generation and the same culture, the same religion. And you would just step on the escalator and start out with kissing, breast touching, genital touching, oral sex, maybe mutual oral sex. And then you'd work your way up into intercourse where the man would ejaculate and sex would be over. That's called vanilla sex.
Yeah.
Anything other than that.
I'm feeling pretty vanilla right now.
Yeah.
I'm vanilla.
I'm so vanilla.
Like very vanilla. Scary. Listen, I don't even know what to ask our audience, and I don't want to hoard you. So I'd really like for them to give us a call and react to this to this information. Please give us a call. 011-883-0702. Did you know that your children are exposed at least to some of these notions? Did you know that this is the new norm? This is normal. This is expected. Yeah? And what then happens to the whole idea of consent? Is it possible, logically speaking, to have unconsensual consensual sex or consensual unconsensual sex? Is that a possibility? How is beating the hell out of each other? Okay, maybe not. Maybe it's not. I don't know. How is that pleasurable? How is all of that? And are we, me and Dr. Eve, being too vanilla here? Give us a call. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that on 011-883-0702. I really don't. I usually feel like I've got some sort of insight into our conversations, Dr. Eve, and then ask this deep. I don't even know what questions to ask.
So let's continue on because I think you're on the right path, and let's go further into the why, because I think that was always for me, you know, kind of really being curious about why, what's driving it, and understand what's driving it. Porn, social media, even just, you know, general media, movies, you can see it seeping into mainstream media, the conversations and the illusions or the actual images and the behavior around that. And so what the young people are saying, we enjoy the power play of it. We enjoy the euphoric sensations. Now, what they mean by that and the physical sensations is when you are choked, you know, you kind of become a little unconscious and you become a little euphoric. And then you can die, of course, if the choking becomes, you know, too intense at the wrong place. And then there are very deep instructions, many that abound all through social media on how to choke somebody so that they don't die. You know,
really?
This is in the right place. Put your thumb here, put your fingers here, and don't press too hard. And this is how hard you can press, and this is where the body can tolerate more pressure. So there are instructions on how to go about doing this. And this is the most dangerous thing. We'll come to that. So here we go with the reasons. Euphoric sensations of almost fainting and passing out enhances the sensation, which it would. It gives men erections, and it gives women engorgement. It does do that. And the physical sensations, because certainly you're heightening every physical sensation in your body. If you think about it, or when you get slapped, I mean, boom, bang, you know, you slapped into awareness and awakeness, you know, you get a big clap, right? What do they say? A fat clap. You get a fat clap and you know you're alive, man. Seeing their body in a new way, exploring gender roles, you know, there can be exchanges and playing of different genders and different gender roles, taking on role play. And they also have heard anecdotally that if they engage in rough sex, it can actually help them from prior sexual assault experiences. There's no data to evidence this at all, to prove this at all. There is so much harm in this. Let's look at the reality of it, even when it is consensual, because the biggest harm is that there is no discussion. Because it's become normative and mainstream, nobody talks about it. There isn't consent. There isn't negotiation around it. You get into a situation with somebody and it is gendered. It is
within the context of the very heightened conversation about context in modern society? Are you saying to me that...
Aubrey, this is why I started the show by saying, come on, let's be compassionate to people who do not ask for consent, who do not, you know, there's so many policies in cottages, even in our schools, everywhere. There's so much material is written about meaningful consent, affirmative consent, and there's a new thing by Roxane Gay who calls it ethical persistence, that you have to learn, teach your child to accept rejection and respect people's boundaries. No one should try and wear them down. There's so much, but in that situation, people, and I've been doing this for 40 years, I think, right? There is no easy way to say, this is what I like. Don't do this to me, do this to me. The lights are off. You've got your Woolies jersey on. I mean, it is a different experience. And most people don't get to see other people being sexual. They don't get to hear the details.
Sure.
And so they imagine, so they get their evidence through porn. And it all seems to be, this is wonderful. But it's hard.
We got a few calls.
Go.
And I want to take those calls. And I want to say this before I take the calls. The tone of being taken aback that you're hearing is simply because I didn't know about this. It's really my ignorance coming out and being in full display here. It is not a judgment. And I don't think that the conversation that Dr. Eve and I are trying to judge anybody. I didn't know. I am a little flabbergasted. I'm a little... but this is not a judgment. It's not to make anybody feel like they are less than in any way. It's just me being a little alarmed by the fact that I have kids and they are of the age where they are curious about stuff online and so forth. And to hear this information jars me a little bit. But please don't avoid making the call because you are picking up on my being a little bit alarmed. Please. The number to dial is 011-883-0702. And if you're in Cape Town, the number is 021-446-0567. I'm going to take some calls, Dr. Eve. You happy?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Anonymous is in Johannesburg. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi there. How are you, Dr. Eve and Aubrey?
Yeah, go for it, Anonymous. What's on your mind?
All right. I've been listening to this conversation. What disturbs me, remember, first of all, whatever happens between two parties is actually consensual, right?
No, not right.
I'm talking about overall context, right? Like reckless sex and whatever. Wouldn't you think, okay, as you say, it's not right.
Well, I'm saying to you that it's not a foregone conclusion that when two people are having sex, it's consensual.
Yes. I agree with you totally.
Okay. Yeah.
I agree with you that totally.
Yeah.
But doesn't at the same time that either party has the responsibility to move or reject that or actually move out of the situation?
Sure, if you can. And the point that Dr. Eve is making is that because it's so deeply normalized, because it has been accepted, because most of the people that we're talking about here are children and perhaps even teenagers without the emotional experience and knowledge and agency to simply say, no, I'm not going to be a part of this. This is why it becomes so dangerous.
Exactly.
All right. Then is it not a social acceptance amongst friends and whatever? Where I'm getting from this is peer pressure, not in that relationship itself. I'm talking about peer pressure.
Sure.
From friends.
Yep.
You know... how do you become acceptable? Maybe I may be coming wrong, but I'm sure you understand where I'm coming from with this.
Let me see if I understand you, because that's where I'm a little bit stumped. This idea of consensual unconsensuality is a bit of a dissonance causing idea in my head. But I'm saying that if something has become normalized, if something that produces pain and humiliation has been normalized,
as pleasure,
then the people that are victims of that can't really say no. Does it make sense? I mean, take for example, female genitalian mutilation that is a part of a cultural setting. Under normal circumstances, that woman would probably say, no, I'm not. But it's something that's so deeply normalized, something that is so much a part of culture, that it's very difficult to say no to.
Okay.
Okay. No problem. I hear you. Let's hear what Dr. Eve has to say. Dr. Eve?
Yeah, and it has consequences if you talk about female mutilation, genital mutilation. If they do not have their genitals mutilated, they are unmarriageable. Sure. There are deep consequences, right? Sure. And that's an extreme that you've raised. But the anonymous, I appreciate what you're saying so much, because, and all before putting it into context, is that it what happens between people is absolutely not taken for granted that it's consensual. And also, thank you for bringing this up, is that it's a responsibility for a person to get out. This is the trope that's used, almost burdening women with this, but you can get out. You know, why don't you just say no? Why don't you just get up and walk out? They can't, and they don't. And you are right that there is peer pressure. There is peer pressure because if you do not do it, you are seen to be out of the picture. You're not desirable. You're somebody who is seen to be not belonging in the group. So they're going to participate in that just to have a belonging. If you think about what a teenager is or a young adult is, and we carry it into our adult lives, we long to be loved. We long to be accepted, and especially if you come from an environment of trauma, you will submit to that situation because you're getting the attention and you don't know. You are ill-equipped to be able to say no.
Yeah.
You are ill-equipped. You do not. And in any case, young people have not got the developmental ability or the emotional ability or the vocabulary to have thoughtful conversations about, I don't want to be hit or choked. And what will happen if I say no?
Yeah.
I'll be boring.
Let's take a quick call from Dando Yenkosi in Kensington. Dando Yenkosi, good evening to you. Hi, Dando Yenkosi.
Hi, Lady Obu.
Yeah, go ahead, Dando Yenkosi.
This is a bit of a shock because I've got a daughter that is 18. So I want to ask our guest, should I talk to my daughter about these things?
Yes. Dr. Eve, should Ndando Yenkosi talk to his daughter about these things?
Yeah, but not about rough sex. You should talk to your daughter about sexuality, because you want her to be able to come to you. And the way you describe it, as Aubrey and I were talking earlier, is around your values, around what you would like for sexuality, what you would like for her to be enjoying, so that she can come to you and say, you know, hey, Dad, this man, woman, person is wanting to slap me and I don't like it. You know, that she can come to you, that your daughter can come to you and say, this is out of my norm of what you've told me is acceptable or what sexuality should look like. You want to be the teachable parent where your child can trust you. So you have to have a conversation about sexuality in general and consent and pornography. That's why these are all linked.
We need to have a conversation, Dr. Eve, that equips parents how to have that conversation. Because I need that lesson. I need that. I need to know how to do this.
Sure.
I'm gonna let you go. Thanks very much for your call. And I understand he's alarmed because I'm feeling it myself. Dr. Eve, what a great conversation once again. And I'm really, really, really feeling very, very vulnerable right now. I'm feeling a little alarmed. And I really would ask that perhaps a show on how we as parents and maybe we as dads need to be equipped to have these kinds of conversations with our children and maybe more specifically our daughters.
Very much so, because daughters and LGBTIQA kids are much more at risk than any other children. So thank you, Aubrey. You're always just fantastic to be in conversation with, and thank you to the listeners. And I look forward to repeating some of this interesting conversation with you in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Eve.